When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They're back. I'm talking about Jack and Jack. Hi, beautiful human. Guys, they are back on our couch for the first time in years. They have new music on the way, a lot of life to discover and uncover. There's so much going on here. So let's get into it. Subscribe to our podcast, share it with those you care about, and enjoy our conversation with Jack and Jack. Hello, beautiful human. My name is Zach. That is Dan. And we welcome back to the studio, Jack and Jack.
Woo!
Hey, thanks for having us, boys.
Hey, we're happy to be here.
You're just talking about our old show, the last place that we all hung out collectively that was not on Zoom, was in our old studio. Quite similar to what we're doing here today. Yeah. The most similar.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate you reaching out when our show at the last place came to an end.
Well, dude, every single time, without fail, we've been on here. We walk away and we're like, it's just such a breath of fresh air in this space that's filled with, you know, just filler questions and run-of-the-mill shit that we've answered a million times. Like, I feel like you guys always just cut a bit deeper. And so, you know, I think everybody who comes on here appreciates that.
Well, I
definitely do, so.
Thank you. And by the way, in this moment, it takes one to know one, as the both of you are podcast hosts.
We are.
Well, season two coming up.
It's on a hiatus right now.
Yeah. One of our co-hosts moved back to Arizona, like, briefly.
Yeah, it's tough to do. I don't know if you've ever done a long-distance thing.
Yeah, like, he'll come in town, and we gotta, like, knock out three episodes in a row, like, day by day by day.
But then they're not, like, relevant.
And then it's like, shit, we don't have stuff to talk about, because we just talked about everything yesterday. And so it's like, it's getting a little difficult, but he's coming back soon. We're gonna be revamping for season two. Yeah. So.
Why do we want to dive into it? What was like the main? I ask out of genuine curiosity because the truth is, it's not your hustle. It's not what you do. It's not your genuine career.
No.
It's not even why we're here talking today. Because we have a lot to get to.
Yeah.
But like, I just want to know why. Was it?
You want to know why?
Yeah. Friends like wanting to hang out. What was the motivation?
The biggest thing to me was, me and G, we were in a period where, like, we contractually, like, we couldn't even make music together, which we can get into. You know, there's a lot to talk about in that aspect, but
you couldn't make music together.
No. Absolutely. I mean, we can mess around in the studio.
I mean,
we would
like all the time.
Yeah, we would make music, but we couldn't release anything based on. We can dive into this, but the podcast, we wanted to kind of do something where we could still
like
be Jack
together.
And Jack in a sense, still work together, and do something in the business front and the content front, while this kind of shit show is happening behind the scenes. You feel me? And we love it. We love just talking.
It's just fun to shoot the shit with
fun,
your boys.
You know? It's great.
Yeah, you're friends. And by the way, like, that's the core of any great podcast, but it also has the potential to ruin friendships.
Yeah, well, with us, that's just like, was never.
Well, you've been working together for so long creatively. Like,
I don't think anything.
Yeah, the podcast, if everything else didn't tear us apart, the podcast wasn't going to have any like hiccups.
That's what I'm saying. If the music industry shit didn't tear us apart, nothing could go wrong there. You feel me?
So you were just really looking for a genuine creative outlet that involved the both of you.
Yeah, something where we could like promote, whether it was like our solo endeavors, something where we could just talk about what's going on in our lives and not leave our, you know, fans, our supporters in the dark week by week by week, which it kind of felt like we were doing.
Yeah, for like at least a year there.
For a while.
2019 you know? To 2020. We didn't, I mean, really.
Shit got weird for sure.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we wanted an outlet. We wanted an outlet to, you know, be able to tell our people things that we just wanted to get off our chest and that we thought they deserved to know.
What was fueling the weirdness?
I guess if we want to take it back, there was a big kind of wrench that was thrown in Jack and Jack following our 2019 tour.
In the middle of our tour. In between our
LA show, right?
It was in between our European leg, which we did in like March, and then we had April off, and then we went, or maybe I don't know what the months were, but then we went on our American tour, and like in between the two tours, like, we had this sit down, right, with, like, you know, the big wigs.
Our manager at the time and our A&R at Island Records. And they sat us down. They're like, hey, they called us to a lunch meeting. We're like, all right, just another normal meeting. At this time, like, our song Rise with Jonas Blue was, like, you know, going crazy.
Yeah, by the way, you performed in the UK at the
EMA. We went to the EMAs. We did Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, summertime
Wembley Stadium,
ball.
Wembley Arena.
Yes, yeah, so there was a lot of momentum behind the brand. And then out of nowhere, our A&R and our manager at the time, they sat us down. And they're like, hey, this big songwriter, producer, Jay Cash, wants to do G's solo project. Which, whether or not Jay Cash presented the idea, like, you know, him and our manager were, like, best friends. They probably were, like, planning this behind the scenes. Kind of, like, some weird shit. But They're like, he really wants to do G's solo project. And so we're thinking, what if you guys just kind of go ghost on Jack and Jack? You do some solo stuff, like Jonas Brothers vibes, and then you get back together a few years from now. I don't know if they ever intended on us getting back together, or if they wanted, like, you know, just to have J Cash and G, like, dive in on this solo thing and, you know, make him the pop star sensation. I don't know. I couldn't tell what the vibe was. But we trusted this dude with, like, our lives at the time. Like, you know, he had done some dope plays for us. Some fucked up shit.
Also an incredibly smart guy with a big track record.
Yeah, for sure. So we trusted him. We were 22 years old and we were like, you know, shit, if this is what you think the right move is, like, we trust you. We never thought it was a good idea to put Jack and Jack on a complete pause. We were like, why can't we just release solo stuff in the midst of our Jack and Jack releases?
Which, by the way, that, you know, there's like a couple schools of thought. And this is just coming from somebody who has studied pop music for the last 15 years very heavily. K-pop groups will do their solo thing and then keep the group going parallel.
Yeah.
Because they like money. And they also churn out music like nobody's business. Incredible music, genuine music that goes on to shape cultures.
Absolutely.
So it makes sense because at the end of the day, a rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily disagree of this quote-unquote Jonas Brothers strategy. It's just incredibly risky and you're playing with fire, right? Because you're tapping into two complete and total fucking unknowns, right? Like, you don't know what you sound like on your own.
Right.
You don't know what you move like on your own.
Nah.
You don't know what you don't know yourself necessarily on your own outside of, like, musically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we were so attached at the hip for so many years.
Especially musically. It was like, even when it later on, when we started to make music on our own, thinking about, like, going and performing on my own, which thank God I never did, I was like, what am I gonna do? Like, how do I do that? Like, he's kind of like, he gets the crowd going, you know? I do my thing, and we both have our own positions on stage. But, like, I was definitely nervous to do that, which I'm looking forward to now because we actually have a plan to put out solo stuff as well. Amidst our, like, collective, you know?
And, like, when we're live, we want to do it, like, chapter-based things.
I love that.
He performs some solo songs, you know, I'm on the keys, yada, yada, like, vice versa.
And that is literally what K-pop does.
There's a cool way that we could go about it. And so it's actually inspiring us, but we felt like it was just very unfair to just completely go ghost. And
to our fans.
Our manager, wouldn't even let us tell our fans. You want to know how they found out that, like, we were splitting up, I guess, at the time? Island was doing this kind of, like, year, like, the beginning of the year party for, like, all their new acts. They're displaying them all on, like, this screen at this, like, venue in New York. And, like, it was a public thing where people could come to. And one of our fans went into this thing, and it was showing all their new acts, their new signings. And it said, Jack Galinsky, first solo album debuting 2020. And without us even being able to tell them.
Yeah, I didn't even know.
He didn't even know it was going to be on there. Without us even being able to tell them. And I think it was kind of a fuck up on Island's end. But that was how they figured out. And it started just, our fans were going crazy on social media. Like, what the fuck is, and it broke my heart. Because our manager even still was like, he's like, no, don't even mention anything about it. Just don't say anything. And I'm like, well, we got to clear this up. Like,
I'm just so confused. Why is the approach to say nothing?
No idea. I wish I could tell you.
Communication is the bedrock to any good relationship, whether it's a one-on-one or with a group of people. So, like, also, these are people who have supported you since fucking Calibraska. They put up with
before
that.
Before that, yeah.
Motherfuckers. You owe them this.
And, like, communication was, like, the thing. Like, we would tweet, like, you know, like, back in 2014, like, it was just an open book between us and the people following us. We didn't even look at them as fans at that point. It was just, like, other people who knew of us. And, just, like, that definitely was just the switch, you know?
It was frustrating in hindsight because me and him would be, like, we were like, all right, let's get our own apartments for the first time, like, while we're doing this solo journey.
But we've always lived together.
We ended up getting our apartments in the exact same building as one another, just down the hall.
Okay. Same floor.
And so we were with each other, every day, but, like, our manager at the time was very, very adamant about us not posting together on social media. So, like, our friends are, they're not even, or our fans are, like, they're not even friends anymore. Like, what the hell's going
on?
They don't even post together. They don't.
But can I be honest? Like, that
we were
still
best friends.
That was the digital temperature I was receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Because you came on our show during that time.
Yeah.
And it was, you remember that? It was the middle of COVID.
Yeah.
And that was the energy that was being, that, like, truly, the temperature online was, like, are they in a feud? Do they not like each other?
Fucking
Which
hate
we
Johnson.
Would be, we would be in pride. We'd be smoking a joint and just laughing about that shit. You know,
it like, was comedy to me because I was like, "How do these people? You know, like but they're day one fans. Like they know us so well. How do they think that anything would ever come in between?"
It gave
us
me anxiety too, not clearing it up though, and having it just linger.
For like, sure,
whoa.
I could tell.
Stress
he was,
me out.
Yeah,
rightfully so, because this is your community, but it's also your livelihood. It's also the most deepest extension of yourself that, like, you put out there for the world.
Yeah.
Like, God, they're your friends.
At what point do you, are you still with this manager? At what point do you cut ties with him?
No, and it was weird. Like, I don't know about you guys, but for us, like, we just like, communication fizzled, and we never actually had, like, a legitimate contract with him. We had a contract with
the company
he was working with.
And I mean, I cut ties earlier because it was very obvious that he was more gung ho on like G's solo, and was like making moves for him. Even though he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna help you with all your shit," but then like he ended up passing me off to his guy who ended up managing me in the meantime for a while, like his junior. Like they ended up getting
his junior, John.
They ended up getting in a feud, and then like he left him, and we ended up. I ended up just working with. He was our tour manager for Jack and Jack for years.
He's a man.
And he was like my guy in the meantime, like helping me spearhead my solo stuff. And what was your question, original question? I said,
are you still working with this guy? And like, at what point did you realize like you have to split ties with him because he's making these decisions for you?
Yeah.
No, yeah. So mine fizzled out much earlier because I could just tell his interest wasn't there. And like, we literally just stopped speaking. Like,
but that
just
has to hurt, especially because you entered into the relationship assuming and thinking something completely and totally different.
Like a 50-year career.
You don't
yeah.
understand, dude. Like, when these like lawsuits that he kind of got us in were coming back to bite us, and we were having to dig into our investment portfolios to like pay off lines of credit that we didn't even approve of opening up.
We didn't even know.
That we're still paying off to this day. You know, getting sued by videographers for overhead that we should have paid at the time, but like, he's like, nah, you don't have to pay it. They always try to do this shit. And then we end up getting sued and have to pay extra for a turn. All this shit, like, that he was just draining us of. My mom would literally, I'd be on the phone with my mom and she would be in tears just about, like, what the hell is going on? Like, everybody was like, dude, it's way too premature for you guys to be, you know, just splitting from each other. And, like, those few years were so, like, it was one of the worst, like, mental states, I would say. I was still, like, you know, very inspired and creative and, like, you know, using creativity as an outlet and as therapy almost, like, being in the studio and making music for myself. But it was, like, you know, there was those waves of depression that I feel like I never got when, like, everything just felt right. And things just didn't feel right. And I don't know if you can speak to, like, what your feelings were in the midst, but I know.
Yeah, for sure.
They had you making, like, records that you can.
Yeah, we've talked about this all, like, you know.
We actually have a documentary coming out. Like, I think we're, yeah. I think we're premiering it with MTV. Hopefully it'll be out. I think it'll be out before this if we're dropping this, like, when the single comes.
Yeah.
But we really dive into all this shit, and it's going to be a beautiful piece of work about the horrors of the music industry a little bit. And
well, so you get signed to Island as a group, and then on that same deal, they essentially remove Johnson.
It was a different separate deal. Yeah.
Separate
deal. So he got us out of our original deal, which is crazy.
No, that he didn't.
He didn't?
Well, technically, I got us out of that. No, but I didn't. I hit up Ziggy, and I was like, yo, are you still like with Island, who was our A&R at the time? And he was like, I don't know exactly what he said, and I don't know what he does, so I don't want to like speak on that. But like, he was like, I could get you out of your Jack Galinsky deal. And I was like, fire. Like, you know, they weren't going to let me put out music until January of this year, which I still haven't. But I thought at that time, which was like 2 years ago, like, I can't wait like a year and a half to put out music. And so he was like, yeah, get out. They're switching all these CEOs around, all these. There's like nobody's at Island anymore that
we signed.
Yeah, it's
a totally different regime.
Yeah, and so he got me out, and he's like, and then I hit up my lawyer.
You got a keep your advance, didn't you?
Like, I did, yeah, and I didn't make him a dollar probably, but yeah, I'm sure I have to pay it off. It's not like not me, but like the music will just always go.
We'll go hush on that. They'll forget about it.
Yeah, no, they don't care. It's all a new team. They don't know it's good. But then at the same time, when I left Island, they're like, well, does Jack and Jack want to leave Island? I was like, hell yeah, we want to leave Island. And so then my lawyer Josh, I don't know what he did, but he just, all I had to do was sign something, and then it was like, okay, we're independent, but I'm sure we're, you know, all the music that we made with them, they probably own in perpetuity. And
it is weird though, like we like probably like lost money while we were with this manager and with Island, like versus, which is crazy because our songs were streaming, like Rise, for example.
Yeah.
That song has over a billion streams across all platforms, which, you know, $5,000 a stream. You can do the math.
Yeah.
Like on the artist side, like I think we were supposed to have 25% of that record, and it was just Jonas's team pushing that. Island had no involvement. And
totally.
Like, still to this day, like, you know, haven't seen a cent from it, from any of our records.
It's
at
crazy.
Like,
you can
nothing.
Have a billion streams what? And not see a cent from it. Yeah.
And meanwhile, this manager was like spending our money on like pop up shows, like that. Oh, you're gonna get reimbursed for it, and it's like, dude, he was just digging us a hole.
But reimbursed by who? Like the label?
Well, this pop up tour we were doing was supposed to be Samsung.
Yeah.
They were sponsoring it, and like this whole music video we were doing, this five song for the Gone EP. I think we had a interview around that time, but
Yes.
We probably spent a couple hundred grand on this pop-up tour, 150 grand. And like he was like, Samsung's going to reimburse, you know, because they're sponsoring the whole thing.
And then that was the same thing about the videographer who wanted to sue us for overhead or whatever. Like,
what? Samsung gave us... And we loved him. Emil Nava,
he's
awesome.
He's the man, dude.
We had such a good relationship with him. He did our beg video after the Gone video. And he was trying to get, yeah, you can...
But Samsung was, you know, they're like, okay, here's $200,000 for these four videos that compile into, like, this 20-minute long, you know, video thing. That's sick, and it's still out. Thank God it didn't, like, get taken down for any reason. But we were like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I guess we had to front the cost on that.
No, they did the original, I think.
200?
And then there was overhead like for overtime because, you know, having crew there after hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were in the middle of Nebraska. Like, the crew was suffering through just, like, a week of just nothing. But, like, yeah, great video shoots. But I guess, like, we went over whatever.
And our manager's like, Emil at the end, he's like, yo, we need about $50,000 extra for all this overtime charge, the entire crew. It was a big production. And we're like, oh, okay. Like, we can get that to him. We were talking to our manager, like, let's get him. And he's like, no. He tries to do this all the time. Like, it would never hold up. And then... So we forget about it. Emil fucking like hates us still to this day. Like even
which
though
is so sad. He's like, we were like brothers.
We loved him. Like he was such a great guy, and he took it out on us. Even though it was like we were just going off the advice of our manager, who we trusted with everything, yeah, you know. And so that bridge burned. We loved him. We'd love to do more videos with him in the future, but it's like it's fully burned bridge at this point. And he 2 years later, like the lawsuit comes through. Still wants the $50,000, whatever. And it ends up holding up in like music court or whatever the fuck. I don't know what that shit is. And yeah, music court. So 2 years later, we have to like, you know, dig into our pockets and end up paying that, which he, I guess, rightfully deserved the entire time. And we were prepared to pay it off, but we didn't because of the advice of our manager.
Yeah, and then you end up paying instead of 50, you end up paying probably 85, 100.
Yeah, 70, yeah, with lawyer fees.
Yes,
and
paying for his lawyer fees.
And a burn bridge.
A burn
somebody
bridge,
that we love,
priceless.
A creative that we love.
Yeah, we love him. We love his.
Yeah, 50 grand in the scheme of things for somebody who's actually helping you generate whatever. That's crazy.
And it just felt like we were, like, we never had direct relationships with, like, whether it was
I need to drink this, man.
Yeah, try it.
Like,
give
you're
try.
Stressing
yeah.
me out.
Yeah, there you go.
But whether it was, like, our agency, whether it was, like, you know, the label, like, we never had, like, a direct line of communication, me and G, with him. It was always, like, you know, he was the gatekeeper to all these conversations.
Of course.
And there's probably a lot of conversations going on behind the scenes that, like, now we love talking to everybody. We love, like, you know, when we're on the call with our new, we love these girls so much. They're awesome. And we feel like we're in the loop on everything, you know, because we are on the calls with them. It's not like they're just having these side calls. They will from time to time, but it's already a relationship that we established with them. And I think those years of us, like, kind of doing solo shit, at least for me personally, it made me realize, like, I had to be very hands-on, and I had to really take the reins, and, like, everything, it felt like I was managing my career fully, you know, with the help of our tour manager at the time, Jono. He had never, like, traditionally managed an artist, so it felt like I was setting up shit. It's good now, because I think everything happens for a reason, and I learned so much. We learned what we don't like. We learned what situations not to get ourselves into, so, like, you know what they say, the butterfly effect is real. Everything happens and leads to something for a specific reason. And that's the plan of your life, you
oh,
know?
Yeah.
And so...
No, I love my life, so
I'm glad,
like,
we are
cool
in this position, and I think we're prepared to, you know, have the best chapter of Jack and Jack yet. You know, so come back stronger than ever.
You keep creating even while you're on this... to call it a hiatus, yeah, forced hiatus, forced separation, whatever it is. You keep creating, but when do you officially go back into the studio with the clear mindset of coming back together and making music for the both of you as a duo?
That's a good question. Cause
well, like, the first single that we're releasing, like, was created without any intention of, like, us putting it out. Like, it was just like, oh, let's make a vibe. And that was, like, over a year ago at this point.
It was
point.
Over a year ago. Like, it was... Yeah. You weren't even on it at the time.
No, I wasn't.
It was, like, me and my buddy Mikey. He's a dope guitar player. We wrote the hook to this song. I kind of presented him with this idea of this girl who ran away from home, you know, just from experience that I've seen in LA, like you know, people going out the deep end, whether it's girls or guys. This one we wrote from a girl's perspective, you know, just because I was watching Euphoria at the time. It felt a lot more impactful. And, you know, we have a predominantly female fan base when it comes to music. And a lot of people go through shit where they, you know, have a change of scenery because people don't give a fuck about them. We can actually get into the whole, I guess, details of the song. But that record was just, like, our buddy Mikey singing on the hook, and I had, like, a little scratch verse. And at the time, we were like, we didn't even think about it because he was still in his Island contract. And, you know, I was still releasing, like, my solo. And so we didn't even think about it coming to fruition as a J&J song at the time. Like, I was producing his...
Yeah, like, the songs that I want to put out, he produced... Well, he fully produced one, and then he started to produce the other one that I ended up taking to like my buddy Jesse, but
we were still collaborating.
Like, yeah, we were making music together, and I was fully planning on putting that music out with Island, and Johnson was like the sole producer on one of these songs. And
this is your solo music.
Yeah, okay. which I can't wait to put out too, and it's been
year and a half.
Well, one of them is going to be 2 years in October, which is crazy. Like, I've been sitting on this song. Savage. I still love it. Yeah, but we have plans to like do that, and like I can't wait to, you know, have both projects exist, because I feel like we always reference like Ray Schremert, or we would reference the Migos, which obviously were very different from both of those acts, but in the sense of like they put out,
though,
yeah. Yeah, they put out like their individual stuff, and the, you know, BTS or whoever you were referencing, like
it all fuels the group.
And then like it makes the show better, and that's like always been the goal. And I know we voiced that to our OG manager, and like I think it was just I don't know. Also for me, when we went on that little solo endeavor, like I didn't really have a voice because of my own self. It was my fault, because like I didn't really know what I wanted for myself. Like now, if like a manager sat us down and was like, we want to do these projects individually, like we would know, like, no, like we're doing this together, and we'll put out solo stuff in the midst of it. But like, we're not going to just like go quiet and then not post because someone's telling us not to post. Like,
was the last plan kind of sprung on you, or?
Definitely was sprung. For like, it was just like a meeting coming out of nowhere. It was like, okay, cool.
Surprise lunch meeting, and they're like, this is what we should do.
Yeah.
Like, you guys can make your own decision, but like it was almost like we couldn't, because yeah, they were so adamant about it.
And
we could have, but like we weren't going to, because we were fucking young kids, and we're like, okay, if you guys think this is the best option, like.
And you also ran the risk of losing the support of like a glossy company, yeah, a fancy label, like
a
great manager.
Parts.
Yeah,
trust me. Yeah,
but I just, that was definitely in with my solo stuff. Like, I do not like the music, which makes me sad to say, because I think there are people out there who follow us who like might really enjoy it. I see like there's, you know, thousands of people listening to it still every day, even though I genuinely do not like the music that I made when I was with Island on my solo thing. But that was my fault, because I didn't really speak up. Like, I wasn't really like putting my two cents into anything that I was doing, and I wasn't.
You felt like a puppet, kind of.
Yeah, well, but it wasn't. Bit. Yeah, like it wasn't. Like, no one was like controlling me. I was just like going with whatever they were saying, because
I didn't know
what
identity?
I wanted. Yeah, okay. I didn't have a musical identity, and like I didn't really like know myself outside of music either. I was in just like a in between place where you just, you know.
When you were promoting My Love, were you faking that? Like,
no, I wasn't faking it, because I was excited to like actually release music. Mm-hmm. Period.
The Don T feature
and
like,
the Don Toliver feature, like his verse is so hard, the beat is so hard, JR is so hard, the producer J Cash is the dopest, man. Like, I love writing music with him, but like I wasn't giving me in those sessions, and so it didn't translate to me in the song. And someone would murder that song, and it would be an amazing song. I'm not trashing the song. It's just me on the song at that point in my life. I just wasn't. So it wasn't fake, like, on your guys' interviews and stuff, like, when we did that, or on anything that I did on any sort of podcast or interview. It was just, like, me, like, listening to everybody. Like, okay, like, obviously, when you put out a song, you have to promote it. Obviously, when you do anything in the public eye, you have to, like, you know, champion it and, like, go make sure as many people hear it as possible. But then when it came to like the TikTok stuff, because that was brand new, and like, you know, the label was like, you got to do this dance, and I'm like, well, I'm not like a dancer, like I'm not a TikToker.
It's funny, because our boys were being like, some of our like, we were like being honest with G, we're like, dude, yeah, TikTok dances, like, don't go down that route. Okay?
No, and I appreciated it so much, but it also like made me feel like shit at the time, because I was like, how am I supposed to, like, I can't say no to my boys and I can't say no to my label, but like, how do I be me and do this? And nowadays it's like, if you're gonna promote, you know, like, we're gonna promote our song on TikTok for sure, but I'm not gonna be like, you know, doing that bullshit.
He was almost part of the Hype House at one point, let me tell you.
They almost inducted me, man. It was a sad, dark time. I would have been the oldest member.
I would assume you'd be recruited very heavily.
No, it wasn't like that. It was just like, we pulled up there a couple times, and like, yeah, for sure, all the kids were like, not kids, I mean, I don't want to like condescendingly
belittle,
speak
or, yeah,
on them, yeah, like they're awesome. That's like how we came from Vine, they came from TikTok, and that's their thing. But like, yeah, they would ask me to be in these like, you know, really cringy thirst trappy videos.
Oh, you should have seen.
And at the time I was like, well shit, like I got nothing going, I hate my music, I want to make money, and these kids are gaining a million followers a day, so fuck it, let's do it.
Even in your old age, you've been able to
my old
keep
age
your
I was
physique.
23 at the time.
And you're thirst trapping. You should have seen this,
yeah,
one.
It was bad.
I think it was like him,
Lil Huddy, like,
Noah
and
Beck,
Noah Beck.
All like winking at the camera.
Are they all shirtless in gray sweatpants?
I think we may have had, well, no, we had wife beaters on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gray,
no,
sweatpants.
Those kids
though?
Are so, maybe, we could have had gray sweatpants.
You would.
On.
No, they're all such nice kids. Honestly, they're
such nice kids, and like it's no, cool. Like when you're 19 or 18, like you can do that shit. And even I know they're getting older. They're like 20, 21 or whatever. Like, do your thing. That's where you came from. Remain true to who you are.
Facts.
And grow as you grow. Like it's just that's wherever you go, that's where you're meant to be. But like for me, diving into TikTok after like progressing into like legit music, you know, selling backwards. Platinum records, it was just like. And TikTok is great, but the way I was doing TikTok was like, you know, the label has no idea, and they're just like, all big artists know this, and we weren't even that massive, but like, it was just like, the label is just like, you have to do this. You need to do this dance. Like, look, this girl did it, and she has this many followers, and so if you duet her and do this, you're gonna sell a million records. And I'm like, well, fuck, like, are they right? Like, is this true?
I mean, the sad part is, like, how well those cringy videos actually were growing you at the time. Like,
I hated it.
It's
though.
Like, shit, I mean, you know.
Whatever. No, but not, like, the cringy ones, like, with Lil Huddy and Noah Beck, of course. Like, you're going to get a shit ton of followers from, like, a bunch of young people on TikTok or whatever. But the ones I did on my own that I had to do in quarantine before even a lot of those kids
popped.
Yeah,
you were doing, like, music covers. They were doing
great. Those are amazing. Yeah, I'll still do those. But it was just like, I remember like being paired with like this really talented choreographer named Calvin, and he's the man. We still talk and stuff, and he does a lot of stuff with Camila, and he's an absolute legend, like a talent, right? But for me, like copying his dance moves, I don't look right doing those things. And he's like, trust me, like this is the thing. But he's being paid by the label, and like I don't know how much, but, you know, so I didn't have a voice is my point. And so I don't want to put the blame on like this manager or this label or this choreographer or this creative director, when in reality it was me that like didn't know what was going on. Like I couldn't really tell you who I was then. So it wasn't their fault.
But you end up learning new things about yourself because that's how we're here, right?
Exactly.
What do you learn? What do you uncover by being forced to be in positions that you end up losing yourself?
Well, you learn who you're not, which is good. Yeah. You know, like sometimes you don't know who you are, but at least you can maybe figure out who you aren't. And so for me, that was a big thing. It's like I learned I don't like doing this and this and this. And I don't like listening. Not like I don't like listening to someone else. I love like bouncing ideas off of, you know, Johnson or even our managers now. But like I don't want to be told that I have to do this one thing and this is the only way. Like not that I don't want to work hard, but like I think there's a way to do it where you truly enjoy it. And I don't know. I feel like I learned a lot who I wasn't.
It's apparent like in your promotion and your content and everything too, if it's genuinely what you want to do, you know. I think people kind of see through the facade if you're like half-assed promoting something that you're not actually all in on, you know. And I felt like you got that vibe, like, you know.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I posted once about, you know, like on my Instagram.
You got
Instagram.
A fucking Don Toliver feature. And
I love Don Toliver. And that's the thing. I mentioned Don Toliver once in a meeting, like with my label and my manager. And like, it was cool that they have the connections to make this happen. I was like, yeah, I love Don Toliver. And they're like, oh, he's going on the first single. I'm like, well, how much is this? Like, like I'm paying for this technically, right? Like, I know you gave me an advance, but I'm going to recoup everything. So, like, I don't necessarily want to put Don Toliver on my first single when, like, I don't even know if I can stream 5 million times, which, like, you know, that wouldn't even begin to cover the cost of a Don Toliver feature. And then on top of it, paying him to be in a video. And then on top of that, the video is made in quarantine, so it's, like, not exactly what we want it to be. It was just tough.
Nothing's
man.
Ideal.
And I was just saying yes to everything because I was like, I don't know. Like, shit, these people know what they're doing. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
But then they followed it up with an Ian Dior feature, right?
Yeah.
And that's not cheap either.
Not cheap at all. They spent a ton of money. They definitely lost like $500,000 on me, but it's like, cool. You know, you're Universal Music Group. You can afford $500,000. But it's like, damn, like, there's no point in wasting money. I don't like wasting money anyway. So
that's the thing with paid features, too. It's like, do you feel like you formed a genuine
No, and that was tough. With anytime I saw, like, Don Toliver, like, we talked, like, once, and he was super dope, but, like, you know, high as shit rapper vibes, you know, just like, yeah, we won't
do
this.
You were probably high as shit, too. Let's be honest, back in that day.
Yeah, I was definitely stoned as well. I was like, yeah, like, this is dope. But then the Ian Dior feature, like, because we weren't in quarantine necessarily, maybe we should have been, but I wasn't. And I was out here in LA. This was when I like moved back from Nebraska, and I would see Ian because we were all hanging out in the same kind of crew at the time. And it was a weird vibe because the way we met was like, here's 50 grand, get on this song. I didn't do that, but my team did that. And I would see him out and we'd be like drinking and stuff. But anytime I tried to have like a genuine connection with him, I think he thought, well, I don't know, but like, you know, I would have felt if I were him that like, I'm just like trying to like forge this like business relationship or like,
think about when, you know, we got paid to do that feature back in the day.
Yeah, I was like,
oh,
you know, I don't know. I didn't want anything to do with that kid.
Of course, it kind of puts like a weird.
Especially because the song sucked.
It's not like a it's not like a genuine cosign when you're just shelling out racks for a feature. Which like now if we're into a feature, it's gonna be somebody who like fucks with us, we fuck with them, like through and through. You know,
like if the, if we were to pay someone to be on a song, it'd be an added bonus for them. But they would ideally just love the song and be like, yeah,
for sure.
And it would happen naturally. It wouldn't be like, oh, who should we get on this song? It'd be like. Like, oh, we're playing in the studio. They happen to be there. Something like,
oh, I want
to
hop on that. You know?
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
a friend because honestly, you could have cultivated a relationship with Ian and brought that about organically. Maybe.
I could have gotten it for free, for sure. If they gave me an extra 2 months, for sure. Not, maybe not for free because he's so popular. It was.
No, but it would have been born out of something natural and organic and built around friendship and not like, it, like things that are transactional like that are hard. And I think LA is an incredibly transactional city to begin with.
Facts.
So. If you have the opportunity to wipe away transaction and lead with friendship, God, the product would be sick.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, we could have collaborated on the writing on that song. I love his verse.
They'll be
sick,
more incentivized to promote it and everything.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, oh, this is like something I really...
It's ours.
I'm invested in it, you know? Yeah, it's ours. Not just like, okay, it's his and I got paid.
Yeah.
It's literally ours.
He's one of my favorite people, by the way. And he's so fucking talented. Yeah.
Super, super chill kid. Like,
great
honestly.
Guy.
Yeah, but I never really got to know him like that because... We had this like transaction.
Yeah, you paid for the time.
And I hated that it had to be that way because we were all hanging out with like a good group of people, but like it was always not awkward, but like there was this tension of like, I don't know, like I'm not talking to you because like I don't feel like you want to talk to me.
Yeah, those paid features with like a without a genuine connection, I feel like they never truly benefit the artist in the long run. Like for the most part,
unless
sometimes,
you're like both massive artists, like
exactly.
Amigos gets on a Diplo song.
But you think like, okay, who does what tracks does Drake feature on? It's like, oh, he actually fucks with their record, co-signs them, heard it through a friend of a friend or whatever, and he's like, I want to hop on this. Drake probably doesn't even care about getting paid for a feature.
Well,
it's
he
like
probably, because he knows that, okay, let's say Future's signed to a massive label. He's like, hey, Future, let me get a quarter mil from your label. Like,
oh,
why not?
I doubt him and Future are doing any sort of, like...
It's all money, dude. They have to be.
No,
I mean,
you never
they're homies. You got... I
No, no, it's true.
Assume.
Yeah. You never know. But, yeah, I'm like, okay, when he does, like, oh, a Blockboy JB record, like, it's cracking in Memphis back then. And it's like, it's like, oh, he probably just heard that. And
true.
He's like, yo,
okay,
I'm going to hop on your record.
Yeah,
he's not going to charge. He's not going to charge this
Smiley.
Guy. Yeah.
Facts.
And I think it's like a very good way to stay relevant and to make the record bigger than it would be if like, oh, it was just something that somebody shelled out money for. You
so
feel me?
How many records today do you guys have done that are the both of you?
Are Jack and Jack?
Yeah.
We're aiming to
have like four right
four
now.
Probably. Four that are like
ready to go.
Playable,
definitely
ready to go.
Yeah.
Only one mixed, which is the single coming out.
Yeah, one mixed and mastered.
But
which is about a runaway.
Which is runaway. Yeah.
Which is so good.
And we want to put out probably like a 6-song project before the end of the year, you know. A short EP.
Yeah.
Or a long EP, should I say.
Yeah,
a short EP, whatever you want to call it.
What do you know what story you're trying to tell? What goals you've set? Expectations
well,
you have?
We've had these ideas because the expectation is just quality music for us. Like that is the standard that we want to hold ourselves to. We don't want to put out something because it's like it's the perfect time to release a song. Like no, like we're gonna make sure we love the song, but I think that we've thrown around these ideas about like, you know, we make different music based off of obviously how we're feeling, but how we're feeling depends a lot on the season of the year. And I feel like, you know, like this first song, it deserves to be put out in the summer season because it feels summer. We would drink to it. We put it on all the time when we're out by the pool.
We're huge reggae fans too.
Huge reggae fans.
Like we grew up on like that's literally every concert we would go to in high school was a reggae show.
Getting stoned, eating brownies, and going to the reggae.
Yeah, a little
concert.
Slightly
like,
Stupid vibe.
A little Pepper.
Revolution Pepper.
Oh
fuck,
yeah. The
saw them live a few times. Yeah, no. And we were all in on that type of music in high school. It was like that and hip hop. But it was predominantly, I would say it was predominantly reggae for
it
like
was.
A good stretch of
and
time.
And that's something
we were just obsessed.
On our
and still
know,
are.
On our revamp, we've talked about this. Like we definitely want to pay homage to like what
we
made
love.
Us so interested in music in the first place. And that was reggae for us. Like the real instrumentation, real drums, like trumpets, you know, not necessarily always 808s and like hi-hat snares and stuff like that. Like,
but if you listen to Runaway, like we kind of hybridize it with, you know, like we love hip hop. We love reggae. That first rap verse, the 808s kind of come in for like the one little lone portion. It's kind of like, what was the song that kind of like spurred that in the industry?
It was like Rude, maybe?
No. It was a
Billionaire?
And it wasn't even reggae. It was just like real with 808. It was, I think it was like Charlie Puth and Black Bear, or maybe it was MGK and Black Bear.
Oh, you know
like
what?
Mansions. Was it Mansion?
Wasn't it?
But like it went from like, you know, just guitar shit, and then it dropped in. It was almost like the punk mixed with 808s out of nowhere on a certain verse. I forget what the record is. But we were like, damn, like what if we hybridize like our like a genre we love, reggae, but infuse that with like a more modern twist, you know? And if you listen, you guys have listened to Runaway, have you? It feels like
you haven't.
No, I've not heard it yet.
I feel like I've never heard a record like it, like in terms of the sonics of it and how it flows. And it's like a very interesting hybrid of sounds that I think, you know, could spearhead this new sound for J&J, but obviously not limiting us to that specific sonic.
So that's like the first thing that comes out, you know, at the end of summer. And then there's another one that kind of is, you know, reminiscent of reggae, but it has. It's honestly more reggae.
More of a love song.
More of a love, really, like,
so
chill.
Beautiful.
And then we dive into more of like, oh, like fall comes, and it's like almost like a throwback, like, I don't know, almost like a 70s
Elton Johnny
sound.
Like,
yeah, and then
I,
like,
wrote it on piano, and then
yeah, it's so hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then winter comes, and it's more like, you know, it's
maybe
like
the moody R&B.
Yeah,
shit.
R&B, because it just feels like that's how I feel when it gets dark and cloudy. Not that it does here, but like,
we're big fans of dropping like a specific sonic during a specific season because it feels like that's what people will gravitate to based off whether it be the weather, or whether it be,
well,
you know,
what
a holiday.
We gravitate to, you know,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not necessarily,
like, and I think what we gravitate to in seasons is probably like the common human experience.
I agree.
Know, people are feeling those moods based off what's going on.
So, what song starts it? Is Runaway the first one?
Runaway's first single.
But is that the first one you get done that kind of sets the sonic tone, or like makes you like hear clearly what you're looking and trying to do?
Yeah, that was the first record that we, I would say, finished in its entirety, and then shortly after that, we made a few more kind of in the same sonic realm.
Well, because I wrote the, did Sam write the guitar to right here with you?
He did.
And then you did the drums, and I was writing the hook, and that was like 10 minutes in the studio.
Freestyle,
we just like, freestyled that. And then we kind of put that on the back burner, and then we brought it to the studio like 6 months later, and then that song was done. And then you had September's Gone like maybe like 7 or 8 months ago.
Yeah.
And I hit you up on
it. I wrote that last
DMs.
September, damn near. You know?
I was like,
last
bro,
October,
this is so hard. Like, could I sing this hook? And you were like, fuck it, yeah, why not?
That one's a winner right there.
And then we finally, we almost made it twice in the studio, and then we didn't. And then we finally made it this one time with these other producers, and then it was like perfect. And it's just funny how things happen.
And the big thing that, like, you know, I just want people to know is there was a point, like, you know, when we were at the label where we were, like, probably like 5 or 6 of the records on our last project, A Good Friend Is Nice, were just demos that the label threw to us, and they're like, hop on this. And like, also a majority, like a lot of them too, we had a hand in creating, which I was glad some of those made the cut, but a lot of them were things that we had no connection to, had no involvement in the process of, and that kind of started sucking the fun out of making music. So I'm very glad that everything that has transpired and happened did happen, or else we might have been stuck in that situation as Jack and Jack with this, you know, major kind of like feeling like puppets in the industry, like just fit in where you get in, Johnson, hop on this pre-hook, that's the part you're gonna sing. That's not how it started, and it started becoming this thing that felt more like a job and felt more like a, you know, something like a task we had to do, as opposed to just having fun and like actually
like
letting that transparency shine through, that authenticity shine through. And so with this new wave of music, you know, I've been involved in all the production. We've written everything, me and G, like solely me and G.
Yeah.
And it has a lot more use of like real instrumentation, which I'm a big fan of. I think that's kind of coming back with like, you know, the Harry Styles of the world. And I'm just a big fan of like music that is timeless and not just constricted to one era based off of one sound, or, you know,
what story are you telling? Like, yes, the sonics you're achieving are new and different, but like, as somebody who's writing the song, and you were even going like starting to talk about Runaway,
yeah.
There's definitely deeper meaning there than just some chick running away and you being inspired by watching Euphoria.
Yeah.
I think
well, when me and my buddy Mikey wrote the hook, like he was just strumming the guitar and I brought him this idea. It was kind of around a period where we had just lost, actually, like one of our best friends from, you know, a drug OD. And it seemed like every other week in LA there was like a young kid like dying from some shit and getting involved in some shit. And it's kind of like a, I guess, more of like a broader overlying message about how people can just get caught up on the deep end and it can end up really fucking with their lives, and, you know, in some cases it can end up taking their lives. And it's such a problem, I think, right now. I mean, you look at the amount of fentanyl overdoses versus like car crashes, like that's the leading killer of youth in America.
Yeah.
And people really get caught up when they have no like, and not saying everybody who gets caught up doesn't have direction, but it could be one instance of like, you know, just having a bad batch of something that you thought wasn't a bad batch of something.
And you can come from a great family, you can have a great friend group around you, and then you just have this one slip up, right?
But then amongst that, and then like watching season 2 of Euphoria, like the Emmy noms just came out yesterday, right? And they got a bunch of noms, deservingly so, because that touched on like the real serious nature, and it was a harsh representation, I think, of what the youth in America are going through in this aspect. And just watching Rue's story and the way Zendaya pulled it off was like, it all just kind of was culminating at once, and I'm like, damn, like, I kind of like wrote it with a ruse and Daya in mind, somebody running away from home, getting caught up off the deep end, even though at their core they're a great human. And the music video we're shooting tomorrow is really going to reflect that. You know, it's not just going to be a simple ass performance music video. It's, we casted some actress friends of ours, and it's going to like follow the story, you know. And it's really an epidemic, you know, going on in the world,
bro,
not just America right now, but it's fucked up.
By the way, yes, fentanyl, opiates, benzos. The system is crafted in this way. And it's not something that just affects young people. It quite frankly affects people primarily under the age of 55, 45. It is taking lives in waves that we've never actually seen. More Narcan is used on a daily basis than any other fucking drug on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. But again, society and the system has set it up this way. Pharmaceutical infrastructure has set it up this way. The government has set it up this way. Mm-hmm. It's grossly fucked up.
Yeah.
Cannabis is not legal everywhere.
No, that's insane.
Still to this day.
But these fucking...
drugs are everywhere. And by the way, being handed out by pharmacists and doctors in every nook and cranny of this country.
Big Pharma is like by far the biggest drug dealer in the world and is killing the most people in the world without even knowing it. You know, obviously...
Oh, no. They know.
They know it.
Oh, they know. And they profit off of it instead of the government.
There's no way to regulate where these pills end up, you know? Someone might be prescribed, but it's like, okay, even half of these prescriptions are like a fucking fake doctor's note where it's like, there's no way to truly verify the authenticity of this shit. And it's like these pills and these opiates and these benzos, they're literally running wild in society.
And the truth is, like, everybody's story is different on how you get into it. Mm-hmm. What path is being laid in front of you that gets you to these harder drugs. But the God's honest truth is, like, not having access to cannabis is... if more people had access to cannabis to curb, to wean themselves off of painkillers... we would be seeing a lot less of what we're seeing every day.
100%.
Yeah.
What's up?
How are you guys kind of switching topics completely? how are you guys structuring these songs? Like, are you not forcing, but are you putting rap verses in every one? Or is it kind of just play out depending on the song?
Nah.
No, like, even September. Well, I guess September's done.
It's not really a rap verse, though. It's like a melodic kind of breakdown. So, it's so essentially what we try to do is create the record on whether it's just like piano or guitar. And start it fully acoustic, because I think, I mean, we've always been like very, very adamant about this thought process when it comes to music. If a song holds up, bare bones, once you produce it out, it can only add to the you know, to the hit, or to the, you know, the elegance of the song. And so, if we find something that we think sounds good on just guitar, just piano, this one called September's Gone, like, was just like a pure piano ballad. And then we will produce it out, and, you know, whether we work with a producer or I produce it out, like, we take it from the point where it already feels like it's got a big song, and like it might just be a hook at that time, and we'll figure out what we're gonna do with the verses. But it's not like, I'm not so adamant, or like, you know, I keep saying the word adamant. That's my word of the day. I'm not so like
adamant.
Yeah, I'm not so adamant that I have to have a rap verse on a song, because like G said, you know, we're gonna be dropping solo music in the midst of all this stuff, like when it fits in, you feel me? Yeah. In terms of the Jack and Jack timeline. And so part of me is like, you know, a lot of what I can showcase rap wise, like, I don't mind saving that for my my solo shit. But at the same time, like, there's certain records where, like, even Runaway, it's like, you know, there's a pretty like quick kind of like syllabical rap verse, like kind of going into this girl's story more in detail in the first verse, which I think fits the song really well. It's a good little switch up. So, but only if it fits the record. It's not like we would ever force anything. Only something that feels natural and something that, yeah. I think we always kind of had the dynamic where it's like, oh, Johnson needs to have a rap verse back in the day. But I love singing too. I love writing music. I mean, honestly, like, the formulating a record, that whole process of, like, you know, starting with an instrument, even writing, like, a hook, like, that's my favorite part. It's, like, the music-making process. And if a rap verse fits in, like, that's where I'll just throw on my headphones and, like, you know, zone out and go by myself. But I love the creative energy of, like, being with somebody in the room and, like, you know, coming up with some chords and coming up with melodics. Like, I love writing melodic stuff, too. And so I don't think it's, like, definitely a make or break. But we have a rap verse on there. It's not something that's necessary on every Jack and Jack record. Yeah. And people will see that, you know?
Was there any thought when deciding that you guys are going to come back together to come back as Indoor Recess?
Do you, like,
you can pull out the deep cut. Hey, some real day ones, they're gonna appreciate that comment.
That's one of our best songs.
If it was like made right the right way.
If we like remade it today, but it's because we completely stole it from Majid Jordan, I think.
You know what's funny though is
but they're just so great. So.
What was it? Chill Pad Deluxe by Majid Jordan.
Yeah, CPD.
We sampled that beat. And it was the first song, I think we just dropped it on SoundCloud and like as a YouTube audio. Because it was a sample, we couldn't actually put it out on
and
DSPs.
And we wanted to go by Indoor Recess, but then like fans were like,
they got confused.
Followers at the time were like, what, I'm confused.
Is the song called Indoor Recess? Or
like, why wouldn't you go by Jack and Jack? And we got self-conscious, so we just switched.
We changed the name.
Jack and Jack.
We made the name of the song Indoor Recess. We're like, all right, it's not sticking. We should probably just stick. Because
we thought Jack and Jack was so cheesy because we were like, bro, we have like a million followers on Vine. Like, we're losers.
Our music thing should be something different, you know?
Yeah, we thought, you know, people wouldn't take us seriously.
But nobody understood it. Nobody understood that Indoor Recess was us trying to like make that the group name. Thank God.
I love it.
It's, you know, it's cool.
I mean, you grow out of it. But everybody knows that, like, but also Indoor Recess kind of means it's raining outside, means it may be too hot on the blacktop.
Yeah.
Like,
you remember Indoor Recess?
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, you had
like somebody with a gun running somewhere. Yeah. Or, like, you know, there's, I've come up with all the different reasons over the years as to why there was Indoor Recess and you weren't allowed to go outside. All depressing and sad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're like, maybe, you know, we can just call the record that because it's kind of too overbearing of a message for the entire group. But even then, like, I was a fan of Indoor Recess. You know, those little, there was like the hexagon blocks and the triangle blocks, the different colors. Mm. There was, I mean, damn, bro. There was some good indoor games.
There's a lot to do in Indoor Recess. It was disappointing when you got the note, like, news broken to you. But then, after like 5 minutes of Indoor Recess, you're like, wait, I'm having fun.
You're fucking knee deep in the sandbox, going crazy.
You're in the gymnasium. Yeah, you're throwing stuff around. Yeah. I get it.
Would you guys go back and re-record any of your old stuff?
Probably not.
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's just too fun to like write new music.
Unless it's like a mashup, like you cover for YouTube. It's like, to me, all that shit existed, and I love some of our old records, but I know after like us even like making music separately for a while and coming back and seeing like how our dynamic is in the studio, which I think is like better than it's ever been, because towards the end of our label tenure, it's like there wasn't even like a dynamic to be had. It's like, okay, some guy behind the desk telling us, you know, get this right take. But now it's like our synergy in the studio is crazy. We feel like kind of liberated once again in terms of the music making process.
Yeah, and like we vocal produce each other, which is like so much more fun than having like some random guy be like, I did this with, I don't even know, Celine Dion, like you must sing it this way. I'm
and
like,
it's good
fuck you.
Yeah, it is good because I know his voice better than any vocal producer ever would. Like, I know what he can do. And so like, even there's times where like, oh, like I feel like I'll push you to like try something that you might otherwise not try.
Right.
And I don't know, it's great because even when I do like a take in the studio, like he'll do the same shit. He'll be like, oh, try and do a softer tone on here because it'll fit this section better. And it's great because like we know each other's voices and what we bring to the table better than anybody.
And you're becoming stronger artists by doing this.
Big time. I would for sure concur with that.
That's awesome. Is it an honor in Nebraska to partner with Omaha Steaks?
Oh my God, yeah.
You know what? Are you bringing this up for a reason?
I mean, you did a whole campaign with Omaha Steaks.
We did like a 6 second campaign.
It wasn't
campaign.
A whole campaign.
I mean, you know.
It was a big deal.
When you
think
of Omaha, you instantly think
Omaha
Steaks.
It's true. Anytime we tell somebody from Omaha, they're like, oh, love your steaks. It's like, it's not us, dude.
Well, you know what's funny is my dad is one of his best friends, like one of his like five core buddies. He owns Omaha Steaks. And so Todd Simon, he's the man. He's always been, he's a Jew from our, you know, like neighborhood. And I grew up, you know.
You are a Jew as well.
I'm a Jew as well. Grew up Jewish.
So he can say that stuff, you know.
Yeah, he's a Jew. and he's the coolest dude. And so when we started to have, you know, I think maybe we had like, 30,000 followers at the time. He's like, you boys want $800? And we were like, sure. He's like, and two box seats at the Husker games. We're like, yeah, fuck yeah. He's like, make a 6 second Vine about Omaha Steaks. Like, I don't know
what was the song. It was like a Stevie Wonder song, and we were like falling in love with a box of
holding
it was like,
the steak.
You know, it's like it pans from you spinning, and then it's like the box spinning, and it's like.
And we got free steak out of it, like the best steak in the world.
Oh yeah,
so,
fire!
You know,
very first brand
that
deal
was an honor
ever though, and it was dope. Yeah, I mean, great steaks. Go get some Omaha Steaks.
Yeah, Omaha Steaks, you know, so good.
Trying to, you know, let those taste buds come alive.
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone knows Omaha. More people probably know what Omaha Steaks is
than Omaha.
Than Omaha.
True.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
You're not lying.
Honestly, your friend must be, I mean, he's king of steaks.
He's king. He's king.
He's also king cow killer.
He is. I know.
Rip.
But he hates, I like my steak like medium well. Ooh. And he's like, you're ruining it. Like,
really?
Yeah, he won't cook my steak. Like, if we're all at like a dinner, he'll be like, you have to come cook your steak because I won't kill the cow twice.
What?
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
By the way, your Jewish foundation and religion comes through. You
appreciate it.
Your parents made you give back really early on, right?
Yeah. I have like a fund or something that like
give back what to like the temple or something.
I don't know. No,
no,
I think they
Jewish
just
Federation of Omaha.
Yeah,
you started it in 2010. There's like a name for it. I don't want to butcher it.
I forget. Well, what
I think it's B'nai Tzedek or something?
What is that word?
I don't even know
Tzedakah.
About this.
Yes, Tzedakah. It's service. It's charity.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Like I gave $5,000 or $10,000 or something like that. And then it's grown. And then like I haven't decided where to go yet with it. And so my dad asked me like maybe a year ago. He's like, what do you want to do with this? There's like $12,000 sitting in here. Like who do we send it to? And I'm like, well, like I could use that. No, but he's like, I made a joke about that. He's like, nah, fuck you. And then he's like, you should do it to like one of these like, you know, children's hospital or something like that. And then I'm like, okay, cool. So, but I haven't decided. It grows, so I'm not like, I don't feel the pressure to do it yet because it gets bigger.
Did you do this with your bat mitzvah?
Bar mitzvah.
I did. Sorry.
His bar mitzvah, just sidebar, his bar mitzvah was fucking...
It was sick. It was spooky, too. It was on Halloween.
What?
Yeah.
It was in his backyard in a tent.
2006.
And this is when the Kanye...
You call that a boo mitzvah.
Yeah,
a
boo mitzvah. Exactly. It was literally a boo mitzvah. That's a good pun there.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was sweet. It was sweet.
The Kanye stutter shades were in. Everybody was wearing the ones with the lines.
I had a photo booth. Like, yeah. Sick.
I went early adopter of the photo booth.
It was before, like, Bootsy Bellows or Nice Guy, you know? Like, we had the photo booth at my bat mitzvah. Jesus.
And nobody I just gotta like rep myself real quick. Nobody could beat me in the limbo contest.
He was the best.
Granted, I was like shorter than every kid.
But Drew Fitzmaurice kind of held his own.
This is actually our buddy from General
from
Motors
GM.
From Detroit.
Yeah.
I was telling you about. Yeah. He was weirdly flexible even though he was tall. And he was always the run.
Wasn't that tall?
He was always giving me a run for my money. But yeah. I think I pulled that one out.
He was the running back of our high school. He's really
I would
really
get prepped
agile.
For that. Like we have a huge Jewish community in Omaha. Yeah. And like there was a point in middle school where it was every other weekend there was at least a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah with
from 2000 to 2000 or from 2007 to 2009 I think there must have been 50 bar bat mitzvahs.
It was crazy. Like in our middle school carpool I was the only like non-Jewish kid in there. Yeah. And like I felt like a, you know, a unicorn.
You can
great.
Still do like Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu.
Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu.
He's lost his touch. I haven't had him over
or,
Shabbat in a long time.
Tovu,
yeah, so he used to come to temple with me. He would do fucking, you know, we would do the Kiddush and the
remember when he does
together.
This he did this youth group called Jace what was it?
It was called BBYO.
BBYO.
The Naberith
and
Youth Organization.
One day they had Bring a Non-Jew to Youth Group Day.
It was you.
Yeah, and no, it was me. And it was great. I just
me
felt
and
like,
Josh only had you, yeah.
I felt
it was
like
so
I had
fun.
To start reading the Torah, you know, at a certain point. But it was
it was cool to be a Jew. See, my mom wasn't a Jew, but now she is. But she was born Catholic, Irish Catholic in New York, and then my dad was just Jewish from Nebraska. And but like not like super Jewish, but just like Jewish, you know?
Not like Orthodox.
And then like we were just kind of Jewish. Like it wasn't like I wasn't like
literally Jewish.
Like, you know, like sometimes we would do like Shabbat, which if you don't know what Shabbat is, you pretty much just like have a really good bread that like your mom makes. Or your dad can make it, but in
the challah was fire.
Challah is so good, dude. And then like we did like, you know, bar and bat mitzvahs, which were pretty much just a party. After 2 hours of reading the Torah, you're like you know, you go do your thing, you watch football, and then you have a party that night. And it's like, I don't know, that was the most Jewish thing I ever did. And then I kind of, I don't know if I feel bad about it because it's just like my, you know, my heart's not calling to be like a Jew, you know, in my adult life. I'm not like going to temple or doing, you know, observing the high holidays or whatever.
But you've done your charity. You've laid your foundation.
For sure. But, you know, I think... You know, I'm less Jewish than I was, so I'm even less. I'm like
practicing Jew versus like, you know, you identify as it, but you don't. Yeah. You're not like really practicing as much.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, you know, Bob Marley said it. Love is my religion. You know,
that's beautiful.
That's what it is, man.
Bars.
I'm not like I don't really believe in much, man. But I just.
He had his first kiss at a bar mitzvah.
Yeah, John Gallagher's bar mitzvah.
I had to coach him through it. It'll always be burning.
It was scary.
I remember that side room and everything.
Yeah, he made me like kiss her cheek first, and I was like. Oh,
all right, now just move a few inches to the right. I'm like, you're done, dude.
And then, like, we kissed, like, ran away.
With You by Chris Brown was playing.
Oh, my God.
A better time.
It was a much better time.
That's one of those throwbacks, you know?
Damn.
Whatever you like, T.I. Rihanna was going crazy.
What year was this? Was I old
2008.
2008, I think.
January 3rd, 2008.
Maybe 2007.
Yeah.
Not old enough to play that song on the radio, but a year later, I would have been.
I'm saying.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, good times, easy times.
Yeah, better times.
Better times.
Wow.
But, you know, it's fine, you know?
We're on to better times again.
They're coming, you know?
Or are they here?
I think in the midst of, like, you know...
They're not.
I think in the midst of the clusterfuck that is the world, there's opportunity for, you know, a great new chapter of humanity.
Yes.
Know?
Yes.
Light exists.
However that comes about, you know?
TikTok is cool, you know? Like, I just was thinking about... Like, I think it gives a voice to the youth, and I think that the youth is the future of, like, hopefully a good time again. And that's what made me say, like, TikTok is, like, it's cool. You look at the comments in certain, like, political videos, and you're like, the cream is rising to the top, you know? And so I think there's hope.
There's also a very toxic subculture on TikTok.
Oh,
oh yeah, well, for sure.
You've all seen it.
Are you on TikTok, Jack? Like, G?
Yeah, yeah, literally, Jack G.
I want to see.
But I haven't posted in 2 years.
Trying to get him to post again, you know, he'll get there.
Yeah, we've been posting on Jack and Jack, and so that's like a baby step for me. And then now I'm like, okay, I have like unlimited drafts, so I should probably post on.
Do you feel sexualized when you post on TikTok as most
Well, I think, you know, sometimes that could be my fault. Like, if I'm like, well, I don't know, is that like, am I like gaslighting myself? Hold on. No, it's not anyone's fault for being sexualized, but if, yeah, I mean, sometimes I guess, like, when you're just like, yeah, maybe, I don't know, I'm not like too sensitive about it, but I know some people are like, I think I saw like KJ Apa, or is it, yeah, that's his name,
the
right?
Riverdale kid.
Yes, he like said something and everyone thought he was joking, but then it was like, it was for real. Or maybe I thought he was joking because it's like, bro, you're sexy, like, you know, like, but at the same time, that's so bad for me to say because it's like, maybe he hates that shit.
Yeah.
But
people deal with it different ways, for sure, being sexual. Like, you,
it never like bothered
you. You would
me,
never care if someone's like, oh, I love your abs, or like, you know, kind of objectifying,
no,
you in a sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't like hot, I mean, know? It's like, dude, like, I think it comes down to like sensitivity, but at the same time, I get it. Like, you don't have to be a super sensitive person for that to kind of bother you, but like, you know, it's like, what are you signing up for? You know, if you're Brad Pitt, like, can you get mad at someone for like
thinking you're hot?
Like, you do that. Like, you're in rom-coms, like, that's you.
It's what you portray.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I think you take it as like just a compliment, and you don't look like much.
Yeah,
past
like
that,
if you're gonna be in the entertainment industry, even on like a, you know, the level that we're on, you know, we're not like all over the place. We're not like the biggest ever, and so even at a small level, you have to be willing to be like, you know, you're out there. But at the same time, I feel like
it's not right,
my
but
subconscious
it's gonna,
is like,
it's
wait,
not always right, but it's gonna happen,
yeah,
if you're in this industry. And I mean, honestly, having tough skin is a part of the game, and it's like, I'm sure it affects different people in different ways, but I think you just kind of take it on the chin, and you're like, okay, they're gassing me up, you know? Okay.
Yeah. Also, if you look like a statue of David, like you, you're chiseling like fucking marble, like, and you're posting shirtless selfies.
Yeah,
like,
I post them, you know?
Exactly.
I swear, we were in Greece once doing a show, and like, I saw him in
next
like, chiseled out in marble form. I was like, wait, that's you.
So what the fuck is like him.
Dude, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, I'm asking for it. You know, I'm posting
exactly
a shirtless photo. So it's like, you know, yeah, it's just social media. It comes with the territory. But I get it. If you want to be offended, and then you can, and then you're valid, you know.
Yeah, all okay. Emotions are valid.
It's so fine.
Your feelings are always valid because you're feeling them, and that matters.
Exactly.
Facts.
I don't know. I don't feel down when someone's like, sick body. Like, you know, I'm like, okay, well, like, I want to work hard. And sometimes when I look in the mirror, I'm like, this isn't a sick body. You
but
know?
Do you
so
see what
work.
They see?
Definitely not, because I have so many issues. Like,
oh,
yeah. Well, no. Oh, like, gee. No.
Us.
It's just like sometimes you look in the mirror and you're like, bro, this isn't last November. You know, like if you have like a day where you're like, that was good. You know, like
something
I
you're referencing. Good. You're like, yeah.
But a mood could change the way you look in the mirror, which is crazy. Like the next morning you could wake up and be like, oh wow, no, like I look good. I look good. And if you're telling yourself you look good, if you're me, because I'm like, you know, I negatively talk to myself more than I should, probably, at least in the past. And so if I'm saying I look good, then I'm like, oh, like I must look kind of good. But you know, I also know that if I say like in my mind, like, oh, like I'm not looking good today, like it's probably a little bit, you know, my worst critic, you know. It's not like
your own worst critic, for sure.
Yeah, I get it. I, you know, there's everybody has a different look, but like, and everyone wants something different for their own body. Maybe they don't, but like for me, like I literally want to look like Chris Hemsworth. And so, like, I'm not at all close to what he is. So, like, I got work to do, you know?
Yeah, but so what is that? 6'6" and, like,
well, yeah,
packing
dude,
on
80 pounds?
Dude, I can't
fucking
pounds?
Be 6'6". But, yeah, no.
I don't know. Those stretch machines where you lay upside down.
Yeah, I could maybe be, like, 6'1".
There's a way.
No, but.
How tall are you?
I'm, like, 5'11", 6'.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah,
it
we'll is
cute. We'll call it 6.
You can call it 6.
The girl's, like, 6.
Charity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but, I mean, like, I like, I don't know, I always think of the age 35, so I'm 25 right now, but when I'm 35, like, I want to be like my girlfriend doesn't like this, but I want to be like 195, you know, like I'm like 165 right now. Like I want to like have man weight, you know, like I want to have man weight. I want to look like a superhero. And I know like people who are that, you know, weight are probably taller, but like, I don't know. I want to. And so that's what I'm thinking in my mind. I'm like, okay, I got 10 years to do that, but like, I have to gradually make some progress here. And so that's my goal, is to like just continue to look good, but just get not bigger, but like thicker in a way.
I get it.
Yeah. That's my goal.
You think it's tough for him? Like, imagine being like the hot one of the group. You know what I'm saying? It's like, damn, bro. I don't even know how to keep the comments out. Like, I don't know. It gets to me a little bit because there's so many.
Like, well, this morning, Jack G is eating like eggs and bacon, and Jack J is eating McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were eating McDonald's.
It was. I was disappointed. I've been trying to get good in the gym, but this morning was a time crunch. I did just run out of eggs. I got to make another Trader Joe's run.
Yeah.
But I've been better as of late. But I don't know. Like, I.
No, I mean, dude, it's like there's no right
sober,
or wrong.
He's been sober for a while. You know, those extra carbs from
the beer,
beach days,
dude.
The beers. It definitely, you know, gets to me a bit more. But, yeah, luckily I still got my metabolism intact.
Bro, so. And you just have great genes. Like, I remember you were the first kid.
Thank you. They're actually guests.
They're guests? Yeah, I was going to say. No, but seriously, you had, I was so jealous. Like, you just had, a natural six-pack in seventh or eighth grade.
Yeah.
But your abs, you know, they're very well aligned. Like, I was just like, how does he do that? But it's like,
if I can just get him to pop a bit more, I think I could look like a stud, but we'll get there. Yeah.
Bro, I saw a video of us on stage in like Miami once. It was like 90 degrees. We both had our shirts off. I was like, bro, Johnson is shredded.
It's the Y100.
Like, you literally look like a soccer player, dude.
Yeah, I was good back then. We were doing the meal prep. We were doing the whole nine.
Bro, you got it so easy. You could do it in 2 seconds.
I've been on it. I've had a good week so far.
But definitely the alcohol stopped. Drinking helps me so much, like
little body fat things.
Yeah, because it's just like I was, you know, we were drinking like I don't know how many, I don't know even what the calories are on that stuff.
The only owner of an alcohol brand who's sober, you know.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm
yeah.
literally double fisting these.
Beach day.
Go
baby.
Ahead, Zachary.
Have you tried one of them?
Yeah, sister, I'm double fisting them.
Well,
yeah.
Are you drinking? Oh, they're both cracked.
Yeah.
Which one's better?
Oh, I. Ooh.
You could be honest.
Berry is really striking me.
Yeah,
really? Okay. That's good because I'm a peach guy.
My
but
dad likes
everyone's got a different
well.
Palate.
I like the blue. I'm a big blue raspberry person.
Yeah.
How'd you find these people?
So it was in Canada, in Montreal, and one of our best buddies, Nico, who we met actually just, you know, kind of like how we met you in LA, right? Like he was just out here and we hit it off one night. And
his family knew like the owner. So we culminated a relationship with Nico over the years. Never a business thing, just like he was one of our buddies.
Yeah.
And
he came to me like a year and a half ago. And he was like, listen, like, would you be down to, like, come on board for this? We want to bring it to the U.S. And I was like, hell yeah. Like, I was, you know, drinking all the time. And so I was like, hell yeah, getting paid to, like, promote an alcohol brand and then drink for free? Like, that sounds great. And so then, like, we did all this work. And then in the midst of that, I went sober. And so
pulled the plug.
Then I was like, okay, this is kind of a little bit more difficult than I thought it would be. But I still helped with, like, you know, I was like, I think we should do a fat can instead of a skinny can, even though it's a seltzer. So I'm glad that, like, my input affected this because I love the fat can look. It's super colorful.
So do you like own a piece of it?
Yeah.
A chunk of like USA. It's only in two markets right now.
Yeah,
so
but
it's
in the US.
We own the US. Yeah.
Yeah. We're cutting on that. But
huge.
Yeah. So he went sober. And this was in the midst where like we really had no plans of Jack and Jack stuff. And so it was like him and Nico's thing. And then, you know, we were gearing up for this launch. The team from Beach Day was out here for Memorial Day weekend. We were doing some event at their Airbnb, had a little party, Beach Day party, to get some content.
Yeah, Nico was like, bro, you don't drink. Like, wouldn't it be really helpful if we brought Johnson on? Because he's like, he's already like promoting it like it's his.
Because I'm just supporting
he
G
was just
and Nico.
Being so supportive.
You know, I'm going to promote it anyways.
And then,
so they're like, let's just
like,
cut
you
in on this shit.
So then we cut Johnson in, and then now, you know, this is like what we're doing.
And it's good because he's not like a huge poster, so it's.
No.
I feel like it helped getting me in the mix, you know?
Yeah. Dude. I want to see these everywhere.
No, they will be. I think they're expanding to 8 to 10 states, 8 to 12 states.
Yeah, and like,
I think
April,
top of the year, maybe.
Maybe February.
Spring 2023.
Yeah, spring.
But it's great. Yeah,
you got some holiday flavors. Call them Snow Day.
Wow.
Ooh.
Wow.
Hey, 1%. Marketing team, we're gonna send that clip to the marketing team. Facts.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
just
great.
Like that. Just
give away all my ideas here.
And on this day,
no, we'll
got
cut, hey Dan, we will cut you in. Come on.
Oh, I appreciate that.
No, but the they have like 20 plus different products in, I don't know why I said 19 so specifically.
I think it is 19.
Yeah,
or 17.
But different products. Right now it's only the two. You got Berry Beach and Peach Beach.
That's
whatever.
All we have in the U.S.
But they have
Montreal.
They have an energy drink. They have the low sugar version, the low sugar variant that's more like comparable with a White Claw vibe. And so.
They have a zero sugar energy and I'm begging them to bring it to the States because I'm like,
so
bro,
can
I can genuinely promote that.
Yeah.
I will drink it in my workouts. I will bring it with me everywhere. And it sucks because every time I post this stuff, all my boys are like, bro, you're sober. Like, why are you posting alcohol? And I'm like, dog, it's a whole brand. It's not just the alcohol, but this is how we're starting. And, you know, I've tried it way back when, like when I was drinking, but it's not the same because this is like two new flavors. But I liked the product, right? And so that's where I was on board with it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of my boys, Rupp, he always gives me shit. He's like, bro, you have to at least try this. And I'm like,
I'm just like, hey, just swig it in your mouth and spit it out, you know, like a little mouthwash.
I can do a taste test, but
he won't even do that though. In case a drop gets in his, you know, he has to start over.
Why are you sober?
I don't just like wanted to go sober, so I was like,
forever.
Well, tell
him
how it started. Like it started.
Well, it started as a challenge, like a 75-day fitness challenge.
You guys heard of that? Drink. 75 yeah. hard. You yeah. hear that shit?
So I did that, and then after like 75 days, I was like, let me just keep going. I've never gone sober for 75 days since I was 13. So like, you know, like let me just try it. And then I just kept going, and now I'm like at like 495 days.
Congratulations.
Like, yeah, thank you.
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't like a big issue for me. Like we were just drinking, like, you know, pretty much like we were in a frat.
You were like an
point.
Alcoholic or anything.
No, I wasn't an alcoholic, but like going back to like, you know, fucking Xanax and shit.
Yeah.
It definitely is like, I don't know. Like
you
I was
make the best decisions.
Yeah, I wouldn't make the best decisions. Does. Like I don't know. Like, you know, you wake up hungover and I'm like, fuck it, let me pop a quarter bar. Like, you know, because it feels good. And then after popping a quarter bar, you're like, well, I'm sober, but like that felt good. So like, let me pop half a bar, and then half bar turns into a full bar, and then you're just like, you
what
know,
are you doing for the day?
Drugs. Yeah. Yeah, literally. And so then I was just like, all right, fuck all that, and stopped doing that. But then 75 hard came around. I was just drinking and smoking. I used to smoke so much weed. Yeah. Like
you would wake me up at the backwood every morning.
Every morning, and I would have a bong.
Like, you would waft it under my nose, and like the first thing I'd wake up to is like, I'm already getting stoned. I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, I just like to get high, and I didn't like to get high alone, and so I would always, you know, be a bad influence on all my boys.
People lie when they say weed's not addictive too.
I think the habit's addictive. Yeah, there's a lot of things addictive.
It's the ritual. Like for me, I love to roll. Like I loved rolling anything.
Oral
roll
fixation,
anything.
Whatever. Man.
Yeah, I would love the hand to mouth kind of like smoking. And so, but then I was just like, fuck it, let me just go sober for 75 days and do this challenge, and then it felt good. And so then I'm like, all right. And then I've said this so many times in this interview, but in the midst of that challenge, I met my now girlfriend, and we were like, yo, I was like, yeah, I'm sober. I have no plans to drink. She was like, oh, I'll be sober. And then like she just like went sober. And then, like, we've just been sober together. And so it's kind of like this thing that, like, we have together.
Oh, that's beautiful. Do you think the relationship works because you're sober?
For sure. 100%.
Could it work if you got drunk?
No. No, honestly, I don't think any relationship would work if I was drunk. Because I'm just like, you know, you just... People handle their alcohol differently. I am, like, I have a lot of fun. And I'm just, like, probably not truthful. And I wouldn't be the best person I could be, you know?
That's so beautiful, though.
It's like, fuck, I don't think it would work.
Is it hard to stay sober?
Not at all, to be honest.
Like, he doesn't even bat an eye.
Respect.
He's never even like, yo, I want to drink with you guys so bad. Like, never even brings it up, dude.
No, I would love to take a shot with my boys. Like, to Mexico the first
day. When we win the Grammy, you know.
If we win a Grammy or something, it's not like, you know, it's not. If I take a shot, I'm not going to, like, go down a dark hole, you know?
Yeah, you are like an alcoholic.
I'm fortunate to, like, yeah, I have full control of, like, you know, consuming alcohol and stuff. It's just, like, I just don't feel like it, and I know that I'm a better person without it, so... That, you know, is pretty much the only reason I'm not doing it. And then my girlfriend, like, we just do it together. It's just fun as hell.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. We hang out with all my boys drunk, and we'll be laughing. Like, dude, people are so funny drunk, but it's so entertaining. And then we're just like, oh, like, we're going to go home at 1:30, and then we're going to wake up at 8:30, and then, like, I can go to the gym, and I feel fine.
Meanwhile, I'm still, like, fucking trying to find my right sleeping position. The sun's coming up.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't judge, you know. I love drinking and having fun. It's just, like, not for me anymore.
I genuinely appreciate the both of you. Your honesty and your just genuine energy and giving us time and energy today. Like, thank you for taking it out of your day.
Dude, thanks you for guys. Having us. Yeah, we love coming here.
You guys are embarking on an entirely new era, and I think the best is still yet to come.
Appreciate that.
And that's exciting for two people who have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, dude, 8 years. We believe the same thing, so we appreciate you saying that.
And it's just, yeah, it's so exciting just to get back to work and, you know, finally be able to give our day one supporters something that they can get excited about again, where it's not like, oh, you're supporting one or the other. It's like Jack and Jack is back, and we're like full steam ahead, and it feels amazing, you know?
Yeah. Together forever.
Exactly.
Facts. Fuck yeah. Runaway is the record. There's a link in the description below. Please listen to it. Johnson, Glinsky, thank you.
Thank you, Zach.
Jack and Jack.
Jack and Jack, everybody.
Dan and Zach.
Oh, beautiful human, you made it through our conversation with Jack and Jack. Thank you very much. Now, I got to remind you to subscribe to our podcast, share it with those you care about, and let us know who we should talk to next, who we should invite on our show. You got the power. Send your suggestions this way, at Zach Sang Show, on any form of social media. I appreciate you. Be safe, hug your family, and have a great day. Oh, and don't go to jail. Talk to you soon.
Today's show was hosted and executive produced by Zach Sang.
It was also executive produced by Michael D. Ratner, Scott Ratner, Dylan Martyr, Dan Zolot, Joshua Rusak, and Olivia Rudensky.
Music by James Asciutto.
Senior producer, Caitlin Plummer.
Associate producer, Eve Bishop.
Production sound mixing on today's show was done by Alex Goins, Nico Pierce, and Joseph Hartshorn.
Sound mixing was done by Daniel Chavez Crook and Ivan Wayman.
Post-production manager was Caroline Rude.
Production manager was Michelle Dorostock.
And our production coordinator was Bryce Herless. And that was an episode of The Zach Sang Show. Talk to you soon.